Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna, text number 16. Adraiva Maya Damanavatare Yasya Prapanchasya Bahi Sputasya Krishnasya Chattar Jatare Jananya Maya Tvam Eva Prakatiti Kritam Te Atra in this Eva indeed Maya Damena O Sudura Maya Avatare in the incarnation he certainly asya of this prapanchasya created material manifestation bahi externally sputasya which is visible kritnasya entire cha and antaha within chatare your abdomen jananya unto your mother vayatvam your bewildering potency eva indeed prakriti kritam has been demonstrated te by you. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear Lord, in this incarnation, you have proved that you are the supreme controller of Maya. Although you are now within this universe, the whole universal creation is within your transcendental body. A fact you demonstrated by exhibiting the universe within your abdomen before your mother, Yashoda. Purport. Lord Brahma here describes the inconceivable spiritual potency of the Lord. We may find a pot within a house, but we can hardly expect to find the house within the same pot. By the Lord's spiritual potency, however, he can appear within this universe and simultaneously exhibit all the universes within his body. One may argue that since the universe is seen by Mother Yashoda, within Lord Krishna's abdomen, or within the Lord's body, they are different from the illusory material universes manifest externally. Here, Lord Brahma refutes that argument, however. Lord Krishna's Maya Damana, the supreme controller of illusion. By the Lord's own supreme mystic power, he can bewilder even illusion herself. And thus the Lord actually exhibited all the material universes within his body. This is mayatvam, the supreme bewildering potency of the personality of Godhead. So Krishna can bewilder even illusion herself. So the verse again. My dear Lord, in this incarnation you approved that you are the supreme controller of Maya, although you are now within this universe. The whole universe, universal creation is within your transcendental body, a fact you demonstrated by exhibiting the universe within your abdomen before your mother, Yashoda. Tribhira Gunamayar Bhavar, Abhyak Sabhim Vidam Jagat. I think the one before that is Ye Taiva Satika Bhava. Rajasas tamasas chaye vatak evati tanmidi natvaham teshute mayi. Know that all states of being, be they of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. I am in one sense everything, but I am independent. I am not under the modes of material nature, for they are on the contrary within me. Sri Viragunamayar Bhavar, Ebik Sarvamidam Jagat, Mohitam Nabhijananti, Mam Ebyak Param Aviyam. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, ignorance, the whole world does not know me, or above the modes and inexhaustible. Or as Krishna also says later on, Naham Prakasha Sarvasha, Yogamaya Samavrita, Mudoyam Nabhijananti, Lokoyam Ajam Aviyam. That I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my eternal creative potency, Yogamaya, and so the deluded world knows me not, who am unborn and inexhaustible. In other words, this universe and all the universes are full of people who are all deluded, and deluded in different ways. In other words, it's no wonder that people fight with each other, either grossly or subtly, because everyone has a completely different understanding of reality. And experiences of reality also. Although in modern society they try to make everything uniform, but that's not possible. Just like the communists try to get everyone to worship the state. But that's not possible. Because everyone has a different objective. Everyone has different tastes. Everyone has different experiences. Everyone has different conceptions under the modes of nature. Not only as an individual soul, that may be true, but the difference is individual souls, when they're liberated, they all have the same understanding of reality. That all their individuality, all their different tastes and abilities and desires are all meant to please Krishna. And in the material world, everyone has a different body, and everyone's individual tastes and desires and conceptions are all meant to please their individual bodies. Therefore, if you have almost 8 billion people on a planet, you have 8 billion conceptions of life, what life is meant for. Different in the sense that everyone agrees that I have to serve my body, but unfortunately, everyone has a different body. So they have a different worshipable Lord. And not only that, but Krishna says, Satvam Rajas Maiti Guna Prakriti Sambhava Ibanati Mahabaho Dehe Dehinam Avyam. That the material body consists of three modes, goodness, passion, ignorance. And when the living entity comes in contact with these modes, he becomes conditioned by them. But not only is conditioned by them, but sattvam tatra sattvena maladvat prakashakam anamayam sukasangena bhananti jnana yogena chagnaga. That tatra sattvena maladvat, that under the spell of material nature, everyone has a different conception, Krishna says. And because they have a different conception, this is in the 17th chapter, they're going to act differently. And when they act differently, according to their activities, they're going to get another conception. O son of Bharata, according to one's existence under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. So whatever faith we have, without Krishna consciousness, of course, we've evolved that. Since we've been in the material world, this is the sum total of our where we're up to right now. What our conceptions of life are. And the living being is said to be a particular faith according to the modes he has acquired. So we've evolved this faith from working on faith, according to our faith that we have, we're going to do something and that will generate another faith. Whatever faith we have right now, that's according to the modes that we're situated at the present moment. Now, that's an artificial faith, in the sense that real faith is in the mode of pure goodness, when we actually see things properly. But, ukramantam sthitim vapi, bunjana vagunam vita, vimudha nani pashanti, pashanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish, they can understand what kind of body one enjoys, how a living entity quits his body, And what kind of body enjoys under the spell of the modes of material nature? But those whose eyes are trained with knowledge can see all this clearly. So human life is meant to be trained with knowledge. Perfect knowledge. Not the knowledge you acquire from school. I think it might be like this. I think it might be like that. We did some experiment and we got this conclusion this year. And we did another experiment and we got another conclusion the next year. That's not knowledge. That's mental speculation. A human form of life is meant for real knowledge, such as Krishna points out, ukramantam sitim vapi, bunjana vajanan vitaha. The living entities, the foolish, can understand what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the material nature, or how the living entity quits his body, or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the material modes of nature. So that's knowledge. If we utilize our intelligence, we can all agree upon. Other things are actually less important. We may argue about them, but it has no real meaning or real value to our real problem of life, which is to get out of the conception that we're going to die, especially, which is quite disturbing, that we're in danger, we're going to grow old, we're going to become diseased, and we're going to die, and we don't know where we're going. It's very disturbing. And if one is not disturbed by it, it's either they're intoxicated or they're crazy, which is most of the people in this world. But they're always in anxiety, always fearful, making so many plans to counteract their fear and anxiety, and they're bound to be unsuccessful because they don't have standard knowledge of the soul and how to get out of the material misconceptions of not understanding who we really are. So that perfect knowledge is found in Bhagavad Gita, and the process of getting out of illusion is also explained. And this age is explained by devotional service. In other words, either we're doing something according to our conception of life, under the modes of material nature, whatever we think. If we're not consciously trying to do something to please Krishna under the guidance of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra and confirmed by the super soul within our heart, as soon as we stop thinking like that, then immediately we get carried away by the modes of nature that we're situated. We're comfortable. After all, we've been working hard to get this material body. Or at least the modes of material nature, we've struggled to get. We've wound up with this particular mode of material nature we're under. And therefore we feel somewhat comfortable. We don't mind our body. We like it, as a matter of fact. We like it more than anyone else's body, at least. Everyone may not like the way we look. No one may like the way we even smell, but we like it. Everything's all right with us. So we've grown accustomed to the body, although it causes us different kinds of suffering under the modes of nature. We've grown accustomed to suffering, but we're in love with the body. And we're especially in love with our false ego, the fact that I'm someone special in this world, and that when the sun comes up in the morning, it comes up to shine on me. That's why it's good. It's a good sun when it shines on me. The rain is good I need the rain. And everything in the material world revolves more or less, according to my conception, around me. I'm to judge what's good and what's bad, what's to be done and what's not to be done. Although many people may not listen to me, but still it doesn't change my false ego. That I'm right, I know what to be done, I know what's not to be done, I know who's good and I know who's bad, and I'm willing to do whatever is necessary under those conceptions to satisfy my false ego. And as a result of that, the false ego stays with us and we just get one body after another and 8,400,000 species of life. On the other hand, if we identify ourselves as dasa, dasa, anudasa, or dasi, dasi, anidasi, and then try to understand what my service is and how to render it to please Krishna and his representatives, then the result is we're not serving our false ego, we're serving Krishna, and gradually Krishna will help us purify ourselves from these modes of nature. And then we'll gradually discover who we actually are. Which is quite good, because after all, since we're all eternal, even that would be nice, to realize we're eternal. No more worries. Prabhupada said in one lecture, he said, it's just like you're in jail for many, many years, and suddenly they open the jail cell and they say you're free. How good you feel. I'm finally free. So similarly, when we get out of this material concept of life, we're finally free. And how good we'll feel. It's called prasthanatma. One becomes joyful. So our problem is not what's going on in the material world, although it is. We can see the material world is nothing but problems, especially in Kali Yuga. There's no good news. And if people think it's good news, it's only because it fits their particular mode of nature. There's no real good news in the material world. Whether this person gets elected or that person gets elected, all you're doing is one's in the mode of ignorance and the other one's in the darker mode of ignorance. There's not really much change. It's either bad or worse. Not a very good option. Which do you want? Bad or you want worse? Oh, I'll take bad. Oh, you made a good choice. No, better not to take either one of those choices. Take something beyond good and bad, or bad or worse. And even good is not good enough. Once you take a choice, which actually gives us permanent happiness, permanent freedom from distress. So, Krishna begins with explaining we're eternal. And then he explains the process of stop speculating. He says, Jayate te vishayam pumsa, sangas te shupajayate, sangas sanjayate kama, kama krodha bujayate. So his first suggestion, well, it's not his first suggestion, but one of his suggestions to Arjuna is stop looking at the objects of the senses and try to figure out how, do you like that object? Or do you not like the object? Is it good for me or is it a threat to me? Of course, we should have the intelligence to know what's good and what's a threat to me. But we should base it upon what's actually good for my Krishna consciousness and which is bad for my Krishna consciousness. Not simply what's good for my present sense gratification. Otherwise, we can see, for instance, we go in Harinam sometimes, and in Harinam we go window shopping, wondering what's in the store. And we see some pizza and we think, well, I don't really want to wait till Sunday, but maybe, anyhow, maybe I have to. So our minds start contemplating. Hopefully we have enough intelligence, especially if we're in Harinam, that we get back to the holy name. But people who don't have the holy name, don't have that opportunity, they go from the pizza shop to the ice cream parlor to the clothes store, and all they're doing is contemplating the objects, trying to figure out which will gratify them the most, their senses. And as soon as they think like that, as soon as they start contemplating, and the lust arises, and we get agitated. And we call that agitation so many different things. I mean, anxiety, or we call it love. I'm deeply attached to this person. I can't live without them. Because so I have to gratify my senses with them. So then lust arises, and from lust comes greed. But Krishna jumps to anger, because greed and anger follow pretty quickly, one after another. Because ultimately everyone's frustrated. We can't get, if something's good, we can't get enough of it. Our body and our mind demand more. And although it may not be possible to get any more, and so we get frustrated. Or we don't get it. We can't fulfill our desires. Or someone else gets it. and we get frustrated. And then we invent, Maya gives us a whole scenario, why we were cheated, why we're a victim, what actually went on, and we start lamenting. An illusion or hankering. We wind up in a cloud of illusion, the whole idea of what's going on, based upon our limited perceptions of things. And then we forget anything that's real, anything that could actually help us get out of this problematic, illusory conceptions of life, which simply causes anxiety and frustration. We forget the knowledge that will actually help us get out of it. And then we lose our intelligence because we have nothing to work with. All we can do is ask Maya, what do you want me to do? And Maya will give us some directions. And according to the Bhagavad Gita, a person that states he thinks, imam aya, idam adya maya labdva, idam maya munaritam, idam astiyam apime pravishati punaritanam, aso maya takshatra, inishe chapalana pi, ishvaraham hambogi, siraham balavan suki. Adyo bija navanasmi, konyo sti sadrisho maya, yakshe dasyami yok modisha, ityaganam vimohitaha. When we were winding up, devoid of, we went through contemplating the objects, we developed attachment, then lust was there, then anger, then illusion, then forgetfulness, and we lost our intelligence. Then what were we left with? So much is mine today, and I'll gain more in the future. So much wealth do I have, and in the future I'll get more and more. He is my enemy, and I've killed him, and all my other enemies will be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am perfect. I am powerful. I am happy. I'm surrounded by rich and aristocratic relatives. I'll perform some sacrifice. I'll give some charity, and thus I'll rejoice. In this way, the demoniac can be bewildered by ignorance. In other words, some kind of theme like that. I have so much is mine. And in the future, I'm going to get more. My enemies will all be vanquished. And I can live peacefully in this world without any disturbance. So many people are my friends, and they're all, you know, exalted persons in this world. And I'll do a little sacrifice, and that way I'll rejoice. So many good things will come to me in this world, and I can rejoice. But actually, without getting out of the material concept of life, without getting out of the modes of material nature, no one is happy according to Bhagavad Gita. Even Brahma, sitting in Brahma Loka on a perfect flower, a lotus flower, his planet doesn't need incense on his planet because everything smells good all the time because he's on a lotus flower. He doesn't have to worry about the environmental pollution because there's no industry there. The only thing people do is dance and chant and take prasadam. Still, he's not happy because he has to die. So he's not satisfied. So he's struggling to fix his mind upon Krishna, so at the time of leaving his body, he doesn't have to go through the same problems again. So he's the most intelligent person in the universe. He realizes that the universe is not a happy place, nor is he trying to make it any happier than it is. He's trying to make it Krishna conscious. Therefore, he spoke Brahma Samhita, not to encourage people to stay and advance the environment. He spoke it to encourage people to get out of this world. And he's the most intelligent person. Go back to the spiritual world. That's the only solution. Otherwise, we may imagine when Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita that he's under the same modes of nature that we are. We can ignore him. Or we can accept that he's a liberated person and he's giving us perfect perception of reality. And we can take it seriously and follow him. That's more or less our choice. Otherwise, we'll just remain in our material conceptions, thinking that they're all right. As long as we get something to eat, a place to sleep, and no one bothers us, we're doing all right. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Yes.
Thank you for this very lecture. I would just like to ask if in other mass there is something, we observe something distracting, for example, lust or grief or envy. How can in such case we again focus on maybe on holy name, or so how can we give our nation away from this distracting things?
Well, we should lust and anger, greed, which means hankering and lamenting. So we should hanker for Krishna, and we should lament the fact that we're not Krishna conscious. So eternally we'll be hankering and lamenting, but we should add Krishna to it, that's all. Hankering and lamenting without Krishna is called Maya, and hankering and lamenting in Krishna consciousness is called pure consciousness. So we just have to add Krishna to it. Anything else? Yes.
You mentioned that anger and lust can be avoided when you are Krishna conscious. What about fear? Because fear is so rooted in the self of our body, and you can't really do anything yourself. You can't be aware at that very time when you are fearful. You're just fearful even if you think of Krishna.
Well, we can't do it. The soul is actually transcendental. It's not affected by the consciousness is the consciousness either in a dream or awake. It's just different phases of sleeping. So of course, if you watch a movie and emotionally you get affected by the movie, that's because you're watching the movie. If you didn't watch the movie, you wouldn't get affected by the movie. But because we're watching the movie, therefore we're going to get emotionally affected by it. Although it's not. Just like if the hero is killed in the movie, we can still walk out of the movie unharmed. But we identify ourselves with it.
What if we are affected by the life, not just the movie?
Well, the life is another movie. In other words, this is a virtual reality we're living in, created by Krishna, by his energy, material energy, and we're experiencing it.
We consider ourselves experts in the movie, in the real life.
Yeah, therefore in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that a self-realized person, he sees that while he's speaking and seeing and hearing and smelling and breathing, he always knows within himself that he does nothing at all. Because while evacuating, receiving, and opening and closing his eyes, he knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects, but he's aloof from it.
We are being compulsive, so we can't. How do we get rid of this compulsion?
Well, it starts with avidya. Avidya means because we don't have knowledge, therefore we acquire what's called asmita, false ego. And because we acquire a false ego, therefore we get attachments and aversions to things. And the more we attach and averse, then abhinashita does, which means that we become absorbed in material energy and therefore we become fearful. So the secret is gain knowledge. Gain knowledge of Krishna, gain knowledge of ourselves, gain knowledge of the process of connecting with Krishna. So that knowledge of vidya will free us from avidya, which will free us from our false ego, which will free us from our hankering, lamenting, and ultimately free us from fear.
So it's a process.
Right, that's it.
Thank you very much.
That's the main thing. That's one of the main aspects of the process, is to free us from fear. When Prabhupada was asked, what is it like to be self-realized? He said, it means to be free from fear. All right. Vala Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.